Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Here's one from Dinkanish O'Connor.
My mom and I had this thing where we would go to Costco for the free samples. And, you know, my mother is an old school Jamaican tambourine wielding woman of God, you know, very fiery. And we would go to the Costco on Biscayne Boulevard in North Miami Beach. So we kind of figured out their patterns. So we knew if there was a holiday like 4th of July or Memorial Day weekend holiday, we knew that there was more likely that they were going to have meat as part of the free samples. And as a, you know, Jamaican woman, if you don't have meat as part of the free samples, you know, what is the point? So I remember this was around the time when she had been officially diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and going into Costco with her, and, you know, she had a way that she pushed the cart. You know, it was almost any food environment for my mom. She had a way of sort of turning it into her home, because the kitchen was like another church for her. So there was something about the way she moved through the aisles and the way she engaged the food, the way she picked up the packages of kosher chicken or smoked salmon. It was almost like a romance. And I remember watching her that afternoon. There was like a melody. Everything just seemed slower to me now that this champion of my life was carrying this heavy cross, right? And just watching her, and, you know, the way that she would ask. So, you know, they'd have, for example, they would have these crab salad samples with the crackers, and they had different types of crab styles. And I remember just watching her take the samples and the way she would eat the samples, and wondering to myself, you know, will we be doing this the next holiday? And then she looked at me and she was like, I don't taste anything. And this is when we realized that she had the loss of appetite, which was major for us because we were deeply united by our connection of food. I grew up with a refrigerator that was kind of like the United Nations. We always had gefilte fish, whitefish salad, smoked salmon next to the leftover curry chicken, next to the prosciutto di Parma, next to the Sicilian salami. And it was a metaphor for the way that I was raised to embrace all these cultures through the medium of food. So when she told me that she didn't taste anything, there was this feeling, you know, I could feel literally the blood leaving my body, like, oh no, you know, this would be such a cruel irony. You know, is this one of the symptoms? Is this the way she's going to spend the rest of her time without being able to engage, you know, one of the greatest passions of her life? So we went back home, and as a daughter, especially when you have that deep connection with your mother, I guess you're kind of thinking, I need to make this magic stew. And I'm going to go into my mom's church of a kitchen, and I'm going to create this magic stew, and my mom's going to be better. And I remember, you know, going into the kitchen with the kosher meat, the kosher chicken, because my mother was emphatic. Actually, there is a kosher market, meat market, on 163rd, I want to say off of Northeast 12th Avenue in North Miami Beach. And I was basically raised in there. I mean, if you served my mom chicken and it didn't taste kosher, I mean, I didn't even know what that meant. You know, she was kind of rude. She'd be like, this doesn't taste like the kosher. The kosher is so much better, have better flavor. You know, she had a real thing for it. So I had this kosher chicken and I had, you know, the Jamaican curry and the onion and the garlic, and we grew Scotch bonnet pepper in the yard. And I remember seeing how beautiful the Scotch bonnet pepper. We live in North Miami, which is right now it's kind of like Port-au-Prince. lots of Caribbean markets around. So literally you can walk right next door. You can get yams. You can get green banana. You can get plantains, whatever Caribbean foods right next door. So I'm sitting, I'm standing there and massaging the meat. Like my mom, like I said, it was a dance. It was a romance when she made our meals, the way that she engaged the meat, massaged the meat with the garlic and thyme. Thyme was such a huge part of every meal. And I remember, you know, working with the thyme and thinking how it was symbolic. You know, I had to make this thyme work. I had to make this thyme work for this meal. And I had to make this thyme work with my mother. So I, you know, I'm massaging the meat and getting everything seasoned properly and steaming the rice and just little things that she would do. Like, so you'd have the rice steamer, and then she'd always put a paper towel between the lid of the pot and the actual pot. And I didn't know why, but I just did it just because that's what she did. So I made the curry chicken with the steamed rice, and I brought it to her in her bedroom, and she said, "This is nice. This is," but I knew that she really couldn't perceive the flavors. And I just watched her struggle. I knew for sure something awful was raging through her body, because it was really unlike her not to just go for it. And I'm exactly the same way. If I'm into the meal, I'm going for it. And just how humbling it was, realizing that our time was coming to an abrupt close. My mom died a month later. And on that same day, I started to kind of look at our yard. So my mom is growing green bananas, mangoes. She used to grow guava, but I don't see the guava tree anymore. And there are mangoes like collapsing from other people's yards into our yard. And I remember thinking how she worked really hard to recreate her Jamaican village in our yard. And just being quiet and closing my eyes, a little yogi in me, closing my eyes and listening to all the sounds, and how I was happy that she was home. You know, maybe she wasn't in her village per se, but she was home, that she was able to recreate this experience, and that whatever time God had loaned to her, that she would be home around these sounds, these familiar sounds and smells and faces that were a great comfort to her.
Dinkanish O'Connor with a beautiful story reminiscing about her mom.
Oh, Michael, usually I take notes. I mean, I always take notes when we listen to these stories, and the notes have just completely covered my pages here. Dinkanish used such beautiful language. She is obviously a lover of language, and beautiful descriptions and amazing emotion. And she's got a great voice. I mean, she is just a quadruple threat.
And the way she described her mom's passion for food really comes through.
I think most people can relate to a story about food and love because it is so prevalent in many different cultures. And she talked about her fridge being a UN in there, and she had her mother's beautiful Jamaican accent talking about kosher chicken, which was such a charming little aside. This is the kind of story that really connects people.
I picture the backyard where her mom turned it into a little Jamaican village.
Mangoes collapsing. What an image. The story is so filled with images. We've got her mother, the old school tambourine wielding woman of God. We've got the champion of my life carrying a heavy cross. I think my favorite as a storyteller is the idea of the magic stew.
That reminds me of the folk tale of Stone Soup.
It's not the same story, but we imbue food with all kinds of qualities. And that's what makes the food story so universal.
What also everybody shares is the aging of your parents. And it was so touching the way Dinkanish described the losing of her mom's taste as a curse.
Yes, and that beautiful symbolism, she beat me to it. I wanted to say it, and she said it for me. Time, everything had to have time, T-H-Y-M-E, the spice in it, and it was also symbolic. Although time, the spice, was such a huge part of every meal, also the time that she had with her mother was such a huge part of every meal and was diminishing. It's sort of like a meal that you love is coming to an end as you're finishing it, and you have those memories of that wonderful meal. Sometimes you also have the spare tire around your middle. She also has those wonderful memories of her mother.
And Dinkanish's sense of humor came through when describing the best times to get free samples at Costco.
Yes, it's a great advertisement for Costco. I just think that maybe they're going to be overrun more than they already are by people wanting to sample their samples. And one of the lovely things about that little detail is it's not a big deal going to Costco to get some samples, but that's the kind of little tradition, the kind of little thing that people do together that they remember years later. And it's just a lovely detail. We knew the time to go, and a meal wasn't a meal without meat, and all those little details. I think Dinkanish is very, very lucky to have such wonderful memories of her mother, and we are so lucky for hearing this story.
And thank you for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a story they would like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email at cneile, that's C-N-E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Or call me, 305-995-2264. Our website also has information at thepublicstoryteller.org. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.